This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine logging into your computer tomorrow morning, right? You open your favorite virtual assistant, and suddenly you get this legally mandated alert popping up telling you that you spent too much time talking to the AI.
Yeah, like a screen time warning, but way more specific.
It's exactly, not staring at a screen, not playing a game, but specifically that you're forming an emotional attachment to a piece of software. And as of July 15th, 2026, so just recently, that's not some sci-fi hypothetical. That is the actual new regulatory reality over in China.
It is. I mean, it's a massive, immediate shift in how human-computer interaction is governed. And really, it just sets the stage for a much larger collision that we're tracking for you today.
Right.
Because we're looking at this wild moment where the rapid evolution of artificial intelligence is just slamming directly into the most volatile parts of global geopolitics and international financial markets, honestly.
It's a lot to unpack. And for today's deep dive, we are pulling from a highly detailed July 15 briefing that focuses on this crazy intersection of AI, robotics, and semiconductors.
Yeah, the source material is dense.
Super dense. And crucially, we're also pulling from the sharp analytical commentary provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, a former lawmaker.
Right. His insights really anchor a lot of this.
They do. And real quick, just a reminder for you listening, because this briefing touches on some pretty heavy geopolitical and political events, we remain completely impartial here.
Absolutely.
We're not endorsing any specific political viewpoints from the sources, left wing or right wing. We are simply here to break down the information and convey the ideas from the original material for you.
Just connecting the dots.
Exactly. Our mission today is to trace a direct line from the sudden crackdown on emotional AI in Shanghai to the aggressive fracturing of the global tech supply chain, all the way to a military clash in the Middle East that mysteriously and instantly cratered South Korean stock markets.
Which sounds completely disconnected, right?
Yeah.
But the thread connecting all of this is control. I mean, control over the user, control over the underlying technology, and, you know, control over the financial pipelines that fund it all.
So let's start with that first layer, the user experience.
Yeah.
The newly enacted AI anthropomorphism regulations in China are just staggering in their scope.
Oh, they're huge.
Like, virtual companions for minors are now completely banned. Done. If a user is under 14, they need explicit guardian consent to even interact with specific classes of AI.
Right.
And the craziest detail to me, if you use an AI agent continuously for 2 hours, the system legally has to trigger an alert.
2 hours, wow.
Yeah. And authorities in Shanghai have already deleted something like 14,000 violating AI agents. Major domestic players over there, like ByteDance with their Doubao model, Alibaba's Kuen, Tencent's Yuanbao, they all just abruptly shut down their AI agent features basically overnight.
I mean, the speed of that enforcement is really what stands out, right? Because they aren't waiting for the tech to mature and then trying to rein it in. They're aggressively pruning the whole ecosystem while it's still growing.
Yeah, totally preemptive.
Exactly. And the commentary from lawyer Kyungjin Kim really highlights the ideological foundation of this. He notes that this regulation draws a hard, undeniable line between AI as a utility, you know, a tool for work, like a calculator or whatever, and AI as an emotional partner.
Which reminds me of that movie Her, you know. But practically speaking, how do you even police that line? Human beings form parasocial relationships with, like, inanimate objects all the time, let alone software that's literally designed to mimic human conversation.
Yeah, it's a huge gray area.
So regulators are trying to define sustained emotional interaction algorithmically. Like, are they scanning for specific sentimental keywords? Are they measuring late-night logins? I mean, it really feels like they're attempting to legislate a feeling.
Which is incredibly difficult to enforce, obviously. And that's exactly why global policymakers are watching this so closely. As lawyer Kyungjin Kim points out, most countries, and that includes the U.S. and South Korea, they have absolutely no regulatory framework for this yet.
Nothing at all.
Right. The internet right now basically operates on the assumption that a chatbot is just a highly advanced search interface. Period.
A really smart Google search.
Exactly. So by treating AI interaction more like screen time addiction or substance regulation, China is establishing the first real-world test case for whether you can legally mandate where a machine ends and a companion begins.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
But the problem with trying to strictly police AI behavior domestically is that, well, software inherently defies physical borders, right? If a government wants their own rules to hold up, they can't just police their own backyard.
Nope. They have to influence the whole world.
Right. They have to write the rules for everyone. Which brings us to the World AI Conference, the WAIC, kicking off in Shanghai.
Yeah, and this conference has been running since, what, 2018?
Yeah, 2018. But this 2026 iteration represents a fundamental pivot in global tech governance. The scale alone is wild. It's a massive soft power projection. We're talking 100,000 square meters of exhibition space, 1,100 companies, and 9 Turing Award and Nobel laureates showing up.
That's some serious academic firepower.
It really is. But the real headline isn't the exhibition space or the laureates. It's that President Xi Jinping is delivering the keynote address for the first time since the conference started.
Wow. Okay, so that elevates the whole thing.
Majorly. And alongside that address, China is officially proposing the establishment of a World AI Cooperation Organization. They're calling it WAICO, to be headquartered right there in Shanghai.
Huh.
Yeah. They're hosting a high-level global governance meeting under the theme Intelligent Partners, Shared Future. I mean, it really makes you wonder, is China trying to create the OPEC of AI here?
Well, yeah.
Are they signaling they want to be the ones writing the global rulebook instead of just reacting to Western standards?
I mean, that proposal is a direct challenge to the current geopolitical order. Absolutely. Mm. For years, China has operated as this really aggressive participant in the tech race, right? Rapidly building up their domestic capabilities, but always kind of navigating Western-led standards.
Playing by rules written elsewhere.
Exactly. So proposing WAICO and bringing the head of state to back it, that signals a major transition. They're demanding a seat at the head of the table as a global standard setter.
I'm struggling to see how that actually works in practice, though. Like, how do you establish a centralized global AI organization headquartered in Shanghai when the United States is actively blacklisting Chinese tech firms from accessing the fundamental building blocks of AI?
Yeah, it's a massive contradiction.
It seems like they are trying to build this grand diplomatic bridge while the U.S. is actively tearing up the road leading to it.
And that is the ultimate friction point right there. You cannot dictate global AI governance if your domestic tech industry relies entirely on foreign infrastructure that can be shut off at a moment's notice.
Right. You're too vulnerable.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. To be a rulemaker, you need total stack independence. You need your own chips, your own data centers, and your own foundation models. And the briefing details how that independence is being forged right now through this incredibly aggressive, very messy decoupling of the U.S.-China supply chain.
And we're seeing this decoupling play out simultaneously across both hardware and software, right? On the hardware side, DeepSeek just announced their V4 model. It's boasting 1.6 trillion parameters for the Pro version.
Which is massive.
Right, but the critical detail isn't just the size of the model. It's that it can be trained on Huawei's Ascend chips. They are proving to the world that they can scale massively without relying on American-made NVIDIA GPUs.
And they are deploying that hardware at an astonishing rate. I mean, the briefing highlights this new intelligence computing cluster down in Guangdong featuring 10,000 Ascend 910C cards.
10,000 cards.
And they built this 5.5 billion RMB facility in just 90 days.
Okay, wait. A 90-day turnaround for a data center of that magnitude, that's a logistics miracle. We're talking about securing the land, getting the massive power requirements sorted, the specialized cooling systems, and networking 10,000 advanced chips.
All in 3 months.
Right. In the West, getting the permits alone can take years. Achieving that in 90 days requires basically wartime-level mobilization of resources and capital.
It's a desperation born of necessity, honestly. When you are cut off from the global supply chain, your domestic infrastructure matures at breakneck speed.
Yeah, adapt or die.
Exactly. Hmm. But the bifurcation goes far beyond just the physical silicon. The developer environments, like the very software tools used to build AI, they're splitting into two completely isolated realities.
Okay, so let's get into the software side. The Ministry of Commerce in China is currently considering restrictions on foreign access to their advanced open-weight models.
And just for context, for you listening, open-weight means the raw architecture of the AI is available for developers to just download and modify.
Right, exactly. Thank you. So the U.S. and China are actively trying to lock each other out of these foundational tools.
Yeah, and we see this playing out right now with OpenAI and Google. They are technically permitted to sell models to the Singapore subsidiaries of blacklisted Chinese firms, which is this weird legal gray area.
Yeah.
But OpenAI recently banned a whole wave of Alibaba-linked users because they were caught distilling.
Ah, distilling. That is such a fascinating technical concept, and it has massive geopolitical implications.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, distilling is when you use the highly advanced, incredibly expensive outputs of a competitor's massive AI model to secretly train your own smaller, cheaper model.
It's a shortcut.
Exactly. I like to visualize this as two rival chefs who are not only refusing to share a kitchen, but they are actively sabotaging each other's ingredients, right? Think of distilling like a struggling student secretly recording a genius professor's masterclass.
Okay. Yeah.
They transcribe every single word, and then they use those exact transcripts to write their own competing textbook. It lets a company leapfrog years of expensive research. And if they're locking each other out of the software, doesn't this force China to just accelerate their own hardware independence even faster?
Which is exactly why the retaliation is so severe. After that OpenAI ban you mentioned, Alibaba completely banned its own employees from using Anthropic's Claude code internally.
Really? Completely banned it?
Completely.
Mm.
Because they suspect the Western software contains hidden backdoor detection tools designed to monitor if they're illicitly scraping data.
Wow.
Yeah, when major tech giants ban developer tools over suspected espionage, the fundamental trust required to maintain a unified global internet, it just evaporates.
So we have these two rival ecosystems rapidly isolating themselves, aggressively building their own hardware and locking down their software.
Yeah.
But this geopolitical chess match isn't happening in a vacuum. It creates severe, immediate shockwaves in the financial markets, particularly for nations that are just caught in the crossfire.
And South Korea is the ultimate case study for this vulnerability right now. They are deeply, deeply embedded in the global supply chain, yet they are geographically and economically wedged between these two superpowers.
And the sequence of events detailed in the briefing regarding Korea is just wild. Over the weekend of July 12th, a U.S.-Iran military clash escalated in the Strait of Hormuz.
A major choke point.
Right. Iran announced a blockade, the U.S. launched airstrikes, and global oil prices jumped 3.8% in a single day.
Which is a huge spike.
Massive. But here's where it gets crazy. When the markets opened, South Korea experienced this catastrophic sell-off. The KOSPI index plummeted nearly 9%. It was so bad, it triggered a market-wide circuit breaker that literally halted all trading to stop the free fall.
Just a total panic.
Yeah. SK Hynix, which is a cornerstone of the global memory chip market, plunged 15.37%. Samsung fell 10.70%, and Samsung had literally just posted record profits.
And this is where lawyer Kyungjin Kim provides an absolute crucial analysis, because on paper, this market reaction makes zero sense.
Right, I completely agree. Let's trace the logic for a second. An oil blockade in the Middle East happens, and a semiconductor factory in Seoul loses 15% of its value overnight.
It's totally disconnected.
The physical factories didn't blow up. The global demand for memory chips didn't suddenly vanish. The fundamental business of AI compute hasn't changed at all. So how does a localized military conflict vaporize tens of billions of dollars in Korean tech equity in a matter of hours?
Okay, so the answer lies in the transmission mechanisms, the underlying semiconductor supercycle that's driven by AI demand. That is totally intact.
Mm.
But lawyer Kyungjin Kim points out that the financial pipelines connecting South Korea to Wall Street have been fundamentally altered recently.
How so?
SK Hynix recently saw the launch of its NASDAQ ADR alongside new double-leveraged ETFs tied to it.
Okay, let me break that down real quick. An ADR, or an American Depositary Receipt, allows U.S. investors to easily buy and sell foreign stocks on American exchanges.
Right.
And a leveraged ETF amplifies the daily return, so if the stock drops 1%, the ETF drops 2%. They're basically designed to attract more foreign capital by making it easier and flashier to trade.
Right. But in practice, these derivatives basically lay down a high-speed track for volatility.
Ah.
When the geopolitical shock in the Middle East spooked U.S. investors, algorithms automatically began dumping risky foreign assets. They rapidly sold off the leveraged ETFs and ADRs in New York.
And it just spilled over.
Exactly. That massive algorithmic selling pressure cascaded straight into the Seoul Stock Exchange. It bypassed the actual fundamental valuation of the companies entirely and acted purely as a conduit for Wall Street's panic, which is what forced the KOSPI circuit breaker.
So the very financial instruments that were designed to integrate Korean tech companies into the global market actually weaponized their exposure to global panic.
Yeah, a double-edged sword.
That's terrifying. And it's not just abstract financial pressure either. They are facing intense physical squeeze plays in their actual supply chains.
Oh, absolutely. The squeeze is coming from both sides. For instance, Apple is currently testing DRAM chips from a Chinese state-backed company called CXMT. This is specifically for devices sold within the Chinese market.
Okay.
The catch is that CXMT is on a U.S. Department of Defense military-linked company blacklist. If Apple pushes forward to appease the Chinese market, it directly cannibalizes the market share of Korean memory providers.
And then looking at the other side of that vice, Huawei is preparing to flood the Korean market with its much cheaper Ascend 950 chips by Q4. The 950 PR model is priced at less than a third of NVIDIA's flagship H200 GPU.
A third of the price? That's hard to ignore.
Right. For a Korean tech firm trying to build out AI infrastructure on a budget, that is an incredibly tempting offer. But if they buy those cheap Chinese chips, they risk triggering secondary U.S. sanctions, which could instantly cost them their American clients and access to vital software. They are completely boxed in.
It is an impossible geopolitical tightrope,
yeah.
Truly. Yet, while the financial markets are reeling and supply chains are actively fracturing, the technology itself is evolving into something entirely new. AI is no longer confined to the digital realm of, APIs, chat interfaces, and stock tickers.
It's moving.
It's stepping directly into the physical infrastructure of society.
Yes, this transition from software to, embodied intelligence is moving so much faster than the regulatory or financial structures can handle.
Oh, way faster.
According to projections from China's Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, the MIT, they expect to produce 100,000 humanoid robots in 2026.
100,000?
Yeah. That is a staggering six-fold jump from 2025.
And we are past the phase of curated, heavily edited demo videos. We're looking at real-world industrial deployment right now.
A robotics company called Adjubot recently completed a 64-hour continuous live stream of their G2 humanoid robots working on a live factory floor in Nanchang.
Wait, a live factory floor, not a lab?
No, an actual working factory. And these weren't pre-programmed robotic arms. These were embodied AI systems physically moving around, processing nearly 65,000 tasks alongside human workers. They were inspecting tablets, adapting to environmental variables, and they achieved a 99.99% success rate.
That's unbelievable.
The investor confidence in this shift is immense. Another robotics firm, Unitree, is preparing a massive IPO on the STAR Market, which is essentially China's tech-heavy equivalent to the NASDAQ, with an estimated valuation hitting 42 billion RMB.
So AI is acquiring a real physical footprint. But it's also fundamentally changing how we interact with the devices already in our pockets. The briefing highlights the launch of the StepX Neo, which is being marketed as the world's first agentic smartphone.
And the distinction between a traditional smartphone and an agentic smartphone is critical here. If you look at how companies have integrated AI so far, they mostly treat it as an application layer. It's a smarter voice assistant you talk to, or an app you open to generate text. It waits for your command, give you an output, and then you execute it.
Right. But an agentic operating system flips that entire dynamic.
Exactly. Think of traditional AI like hiring an external consultant. You ask a question, they give you a report. An agentic OS is like hiring a chief of staff. Mm-hmm. You give them a broad goal, and they physically take over the operation.
I love that analogy.
Thanks. The StepX Neo integrates the AI foundation model directly into the hardware and the operating system itself. You tell the phone what you want to achieve, and the AI seamlessly opens your apps, pulls your files, reads your screen, and literally presses the buttons on your behalf. The AI isn't a feature on the phone. The AI is the entity operating the phone for you.
And to support this totally new paradigm, the foundational infrastructure of the internet is being rewired. Chinese telecom companies, we're talking China Telecom, China Mobile, China Unicom, they are fundamentally shifting their business models. They're moving away from simply selling bandwidth.
Yeah. Instead of selling you gigabytes of data or internet access speeds, they are now selling AI tokens as a monthly subscription utility.
Which is wild.
China Telecom is offering 10 million tokens for 9.9 RMB a month. It completely redefines what a telecom company even does.
It is a profound shift in utility economics. Think about it. We used to pay for the connection to the internet. Now we're paying for the raw computing power required to generate logic.
If you think about the evolution of telecommunications, right? We started by paying by the minute for dial-up access. Hmm. Then we moved to paying for monthly broadband data caps.
Yeah.
And now we are shifting to paying for intelligence on tap.
Intelligence on tap, yeah.
When you buy a token, you are buying a word-generated, an image-rendered, or a physical action taken by an AI. It is monetizing raw cognitive output as a basic utility, just like electricity or water.
When you pull all these threads together, the picture is just stunning. AI is transitioning from this novel software service into the operating system for our personal lives, the physical labor force in our factories, and the foundational utilities sold by our phone companies.
It is an incredible amount of ground we've covered today. I mean, we started this deep dive looking at how a government attempts to outlaw emotional attachment to an algorithm, right? Setting a global precedent for human-computer interaction. We explored the diplomatic friction of WAIC 2026, where China is leveraging its massive domestic market to demand a real role in writing the global rules. We examined the severe bifurcation of the tech ecosystem, from the 90-day deployment of 10,000 card hardware clusters to the paranoia surrounding software distillation.
And we saw the tangible fallout of those fractured systems. We traced how high-speed ETF pipelines allowed a geopolitical shock in the Strait of Hormuz to completely bypass fundamental market logic and instantly trigger a stock market collapse in Seoul.
It has been a fascinating journey unpacking this briefing and all the sharp insights provided by lawyer Kunjin Kim. The sheer speed at which AI is stepping out of the servers and into the physical world, into agentic smartphones and humanoid factory workers, it proves that these two ticking clocks of technological advancement and geopolitical tension are now permanently synchronized.
They really are. And understanding how these systems interact is the only way to navigate what comes next. And, you know, I want to leave you with one final thought to consider, something that emerges when you combine everything we've discussed today.
Let's hear it.
If our society is actively rewriting its critical infrastructure, our telecom networks, our manufacturing lines, and our personal devices to rely entirely on continuous access to AI compute, well, and if the global supply chains building those systems are deeply fractured, aggressively decoupled, and heavily sanctioned, what happens when the next geopolitical shock isn't just an oil blockade, but a targeted severance of the data cables or hardware pipelines powering a nation's intelligence utility?
Wow.
If intelligence is the new electricity, what happens when a localized conflict flips the breaker on an entire country's cognitive grid?
It is a sobering question, and it highlights exactly why we have to look past the isolated headlines and really understand the underlying mechanics shaping our reality. Keep questioning the systems you rely on, keep looking for those hidden connections, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.